If you're looking for a swimming competition like no other, then you'll want to listen to the next 30 seconds. The AP Race London International, taking place at the iconic London Aquatic Centre from the 25th to the 27th of May, is the chance to race some of the finest swimmers in the world. Who wouldn't like to meet their swimming icons both in the water and in person? Now, entries are closing very soon and the entry times are entirely achievable for age group swimmers. So for anyone who's wanting the opportunity to race at the AP Race London International in May, head over to events.aprace.club and you could get the chance to race some of the biggest swimmers in this country.
But yeah, obviously the 2 and a 3, it was kind of people saying, you know, you're not actually quite on the team yet, James. And I'm like, I would do a swear word there, but I'm not going to do it. But there was a bit of doubt in my head, thinking, like, you're not on the team yet. This is my, obviously, I knew I was going to have a great 2 and a 3. That was always going to happen. But there was a bit of doubt there of that, like, that little impulse at the back of my brain thinking, you're not on the team. But then I also thought I could have won. The 2 and a 3.
Dan, this is one of the most requested episodes of the Propulsion Swimming podcast that is coming at people today. We have the one and only James Guy on to talk to everyone.
Do you know what? It amazes me that we're on around, what, 190 odd episodes?
And we 195.
Yeah, we haven't yet had Jimmy on the podcast. I mean, it's about time we've had him on, seeing as though he's been part of Team GB for, what, the best part of a decade? You know, 10 years?
And more.
Yeah, more, yeah. I mean, he's a true icon of swimming in this country, and he will be on his way to his third Olympic Games this summer in Paris.
Look, he doesn't really need an introduction to our guests. But in case you don't know, James Guy is a multiple Olympic medalist. He is a multiple world medalist. He is an Olympic champion, a world champion. He is one of the greatest relay swimmers Great Britain has ever produced, maybe in fact in the world, rivaling the great Michael Phelps. He has been a stalwart for British swimming, now Aquatics GB, but we'll say British swimming in this aspect, for the best part, like Dan said, for 12 years or even more. So please welcome everyone, James Guy.
James,
thank you for joining us this week. How are things with you?
Oh, thanks for having us. Yeah, things are pretty good. Back into the graph now. I had a few days off after the trials last week. I swam Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Went to Mallorca for a few days to look at my running venue, which was quite nice. Tried all the food, which was amazing. And nice to have a quick breakaway and, you know, kind of reset after probably quite an intense week. You kind of have to have that kind of reset button of just doing that. Even though it's not the kind of the major meet of the year, you start to have that little breakaway of doing a bit of personal things you want to do or some hobbies. I think that's really, really important to have that. So apart from that, we're kind of straight back into it. I've had a few key sets this week and yeah, I'm still in a pretty good place, if I'm honest with you. Yeah,
I mean, planning a wedding can be pretty stressful as well. Like,
yeah,
especially that's not entirely time off.
No, it's kind of nice because my partner, she's, you know, with that kind of stuff, she does it for work. So she's very kind of direct to the point.
Okay.
I was back to back and I'm kind of having my ideas put in as well. But, you know, with that kind of aspect, the people who we've been abroad with are very, very nice, very quick with responses. And when we saw it for the first time, we actually booked it before we'd even seen it. So when we saw it, we were like, wow, this is it straight away. So it kind of put our mind at ease of this is what we want to do. And I'd rather kind of get it done rather than leave it last minute, because obviously, you know, you don't want to, you know, be panicking the last few months of getting it all right. So, yeah, apart from that, it's all been quite smooth so far.
Nice.
Very good.
I guess the first kind of swimming place to start then is, like, congratulations on a third Olympic Games. What does it mean for you to go to yet another Olympics?
I think with the terms of Olympics, I don't actually think of it at the start of the week. I never thought I was qualifying for my third Olympics. It was kind of, what do I need to do to kind of put myself out there for medal contention? But when you kind of look at back at it and you're going to your third Olympic Games, it's actually quite a nice feeling. But I never saw it as that at the start of the week. And I never saw it as trying to qualify for my games for the third one. It was all about what can I do to kind of get the best swims out there. And sometimes you take it for granted of, like, people have worked their whole life to kind of get into this position. You've worked your backside off for 3 or 4 years and you don't have the swim you want. And then you're not going. So to be in that position, it's horrible, you know. But it was nice to kind of get the qualification done on the last day. But yeah, it's kind of nice to say that I'm going to my third Olympics. And, you know, as a kid, this is what we dream of doing, especially in swimming. It's the biggest thing we can do, I think, for any Olympic sport. But to go to the third one is with the same guys who I went with into Rio with, you know, Duncan, Ben Proud, you know, Adam. It's we've come a long way since then. You know, we've only been like 19, 20, 21. You know, we're all, you know, especially me and stuff, Adam's got a kid, I'm getting married, like, you know, how times have changed since then. But yeah, it's quite nice to say that I'm going to my third one, which is, you know, pretty cool.
What's the secret to that longevity then? Because it's been the best part, or actually, I think it has been 10 years. So what is there a secret to it?
I think especially with swimming, you have to enjoy it at the end of the day. You know, it's not an easy sport. We put our bodies through hell every single day. It's kind of like boxing. The work we do is, I don't think it's very normal. You know, you pound yourself up and down twice a day, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. You know, it's especially in the morning when it's dark and it's cold, it's hardly enjoyable, that kind of, you know, doing that. But I think the love I have for it is something that I'll always do. I love training. I love competing against the best guys in the world. Like, it's like when I was 9 or 10 years old, that kind of feeling of, you know, getting a PB, it's something that you can't really, you know, compared to anything else, in my opinion, especially in swimming. It's literally it's the best feeling in the world. They always say, you know, happiness is swimming fast. So, yeah, I really enjoy what I do. I love trying to find ways of getting better. I think that's why I'm still here today, to be honest with you.
It's got to be nice to have a few PBs to your name this year as well, then. If that's
of course. I feel like everyone thinks as you get older, it gets harder to PB, especially the young ones out there. You know, they can probably train this much and PB by that much, where we're, you know, the complete opposite. But it just shows, you know, I'm 28. You know, obviously the few events, especially last week, was the PB on the 103. You know, I don't really do any work for that. The 203 is fastest I've been for 7 or 8 years. But this old age thing is not really, it's a bit of a myth. It's such an old school mentality of, you know, you're getting old now, I'm like, well, how's that happened then last week of the time I've just done? So for me, it kind of shows that you have to do the right work to get where you want to go.
So what was the reasoning before the 103? Because you did race it at Bucks and you raced it as your first event at Trials. Was that to lead into like the early speed for the 200? Was that kind of the aim?
No, not really, mate. It was just to see what I could go. You know, as I said before, like I don't do any 100 work, freestyle work at all. In training, it's always, if I do any speed, it'll always be fly. But it's just to see what I could go. I feel like my freestyle's in a really good place. It's definitely moved on a lot over the last few years, especially to where I am now. It's just kind of leap and bounds better where it was. I just thought, you know, try and throw my name into the mixer. Obviously made the final from the morning swim. I think I could have dropped another 0.3, maybe 0.4 potentially. And I just thought, you know, I kind of made my point of what I wanted to do. I never was going to swim the final. That was never part of my plan. It was just to kind of do the heat, throw it out there, see what I could go, especially for Bucks as well. So yeah, and that was the main reason behind it, really. There's nothing else to it.
Okay.
Yeah. With the 200 being the last race and the way you qualify for the Olympics, I was going to ask, was it nervous waiting that long for the meet to go along, knowing that you aren't quite qualified yet? But you started in the intro by saying it was kind of a short-term mindset. You were just looking at medaling.
Yeah.
So heading into that final race, I'm guessing the nerves weren't quite on the table in terms of Olympics.
Yeah, it was weird because it was like, usually obviously I qualify at the start of the week if it's like a 403. Well, 2016 was the 403 day one on the team. It was a 200 fly a couple of years ago, 155.2 on the team straight away. So obviously the 100 fly didn't go to plan at all. You know, raced it completely wrong and just swam it like an age grouper. But yeah, obviously the 203, it was kind of people saying, you know, you're not actually quite on the team yet, James. And I'm like, I would do a swear word there, but I'm not going to do it. But there was a bit of doubt in my head of thinking, like, you're not on the team yet. This is my, obviously, I knew I was going to have a great 203. That was always going to happen. But there was a bit of doubt there of that, like, that little impulse at the back of my brain thinking, you're not on the team. But then I also thought I could have won. The 203. But obviously, when it was all said and done, obviously trying to qualify, that kind of relief of pressure is nice. But yeah, I would say on the last day there was a little bit of like inkling nerve, you're not on the team yet. So the mindset did change a little bit towards the end of the meet.
Well, if we dive deeper into the 203 then, because as a spectator and as a fan, leaving the 203 as the final event on the final day is incredible, right? But as a swimmer who's racing the event, what's it like for you?
They changed it. So what they used to do was years ago, was 2013, 2014, like earlier as well. The 2 and 3, they'd follow like a World Olympic schedule. So it'd be like 2 and 3, day two, 2 and 3, day two.
Yeah.
And then 2015, they put it on the last day. 2016, it was the last day. 17, last day. 18, it's kind of like the showcase event of what I would say the British swimming guys do, the powers that be above. You know, it's great because it's like everyone talks about it. It's a great race to watch. But to be honest with you, like, I knew that it was going to be probably the six guys that are in it of that who I thought they would be there. But before the call room, like in the final call room, it's always quite chilled. I think the 103 was quite tense from what I heard. But the 203 was like, you know, we're always cracking jokes. We've been in that position so many times before. Like Dino was just saying a few jokes, Duncan, myself, Matt. But then at the end of the day, we're all friends outside the pool. Like, I talk to Duncan daily. I see Matt daily. I play golf with Dino around the corner. Like, it's never, ever personal. But at the end of the day, you want to beat everyone. And that's just the way it is for that minute and 45 of racing. You don't want to lose. But yeah, I feel like it was quite a chill call room. And that's, I think it's quite nice to have that memories of those guys where we've been, especially myself and Duncan, you know, we've been doing it since 2015, 2014 in the finals together, doing the 2 and 3 together. Mm. So, you know, doing it again 10 years later is still, you know, quite nice. Mm. But yeah, it was quite a relaxed environment. I really enjoyed it. And it's just kind of go out there, do your race plan and, you know, you get what you get.
Mm.
Nice and relaxed, despite taking a little bit too much caffeine beforehand.
Yeah, like, I you think spoke so. To us after. Yeah. A little bit. I was not to make any excuses because I would never do that, but I think I had the Morton gel as well a little bit too late and a bit too much caffeine. I could feel my stomach cramping a little bit. So I was like, oh no, don't do this, don't do this. But you know, sometimes you have to just block it out because when you dive in and you start swimming, it just completely goes.
Yeah.
But it's that initial kind of you walking out and your arms start tingling, your stomach starts a bit crampy. But it's something you kind of realize that when you go to the next one, you don't have to have the extra coffee or might do the Morton gel a bit later on, a bit earlier. But yeah, you know, that was something for me that was once I dived in, that kind of went out the window. It was completely fine. So, but yeah, it's kind of weird to dive in with that kind of feeling of, yeah, my stomach's cramping here. It's not quite nice.
So you're still learning tricks despite third Olympic team. Like, it's still amazing.
I think as you get older, you start to kind of digest more about how your swims. Like, you know, I think myself and Adam in that aspect of, you know, when he went 56.9, there was a way of doing it. He did it. And he's also, you know, I think he's finding that way to do it again. Mm-hmm. You kind of forget how you did it. Like for me, going a certain time is like, how did you actually do it? Well, this is what you did. This is how we trained to do it. You kind of got to get back there. Sometimes you kind of, you know, you look at all the bad moments, but actually look at the good things and like, what did you do to get to that position and that time? And I feel like, you know, the top coaches will always do it as in like, they'll look at it and go, well, this was really, really good. Because usually you swim and you celebrate and you kind of forget of how you actually swam the race. And I feel like now we're kind of looking back of like, how did you do that? Okay, these are the race. This is what we did. This is the prep beforehand, what we did for it. You know, let's do it again. So it's kind of learning. It's like, again, learning how to swim fast. Are you at the right rate? This is what really works well. This is where you're most efficient. Do that. Because sometimes you just kind of forget and take it for granted a little bit, I think.
Have you looked back at the race and analysed it and taken away bits and pieces where it went well and what didn't go well?
Yeah, so I feel like this is kind of a really thing that after the race, it kind of, people were saying to me, you know, you took it out. You was a very, very, very brave swim. It was very gutsy. And I'm like, hang on a minute. This was like, I know my freestyle's in a really good place. This was the plan from the start. Because I'm a lot fitter aerobically, like, than I ever have been before. You know, I was 50.5 at the 100, 117.5. And for me, that was always a part of the race plan. That's what we trained to do. I'm generally a lot fitter. So I knew that I could do that. And that's what I've been training for, especially at the pool. And for me, I faded the last kind of 20 meters. That's where it started to burn a little bit. But yeah, I feel like, you know, it just showed that my stroke looked great. My stroke counts were really low. Technically, I didn't really fall apart. Like I didn't start swinging. So in my head, I'm like, right, okay, I've now got another 12 weeks of work to kind of get that back end right and go the 144 that, you know, I would love to do. It just shows for me that what I'm doing right now in the pool is clearly working. So it was a massive confidence booster in that aspect. But the actual the race plan, the splits, the tactics, you know, the way I swam it was perfect, probably apart from the last 25 metres where it started to burn. But yeah, I was really happy with the swim. You know, I couldn't, in terms of like probably turn execution, could have been faster around the walls. Off the wall was really good. Underwaters were pretty good. Didn't breathe the first stroke. So all these little things you can think about where that was perfect, that was that was perfect. But you can just see the last 20 metres where it started, the arm started to go a little bit. I think that's where it probably kind of caught me a little and went past me, especially Matt and, you know, Duncan and Dino were just going past. And for me, it's getting that part right and the rest of the race will take care of itself, I think.
You have always been the swimmer to take it out from the gun. Like, that has been your tactic, no matter the race, whether it's two, three,
two, fly as well.
Two fly. Like, why is that the tactic that you turn to? Because I know Ian Thorpe a while ago said, like, 200 free swam wrong. Like, people should just sprint that from the gun.
And I feel like, I think it's, there was a bit of a thing where probably 2018, 19, I just didn't have any confidence in what I was doing. And like that for me was just to try and take it out from the start and try and hold on as much as I could do. Where like now, and the last few years, it's kind of been a bit more cautious of how you swim. You don't want to fade away the last, you know, half of the race where, you look at any 200 freestyle now, probably apart from, you know, Duncan in 2021, he was out 51, I think mid to high. Most of these guys now, especially Popovici in 20, when he did that 142, is out 50 point mid to low. And I feel like for me, because I have that easy speed, 50 point mid to high is probably where it should be. Like, I feel like there's a certain point where you can only come back so fast. You know, I think Popovici went 145.1 at the Nationals last week, but he was at 51.9. Like, and he came back 26.2. But, you know, how fast can you come back? You know, there's a certain point where you're going out easy. So you're going out comfortable, like fast, but are you going out hard? And it's going to burn the last kind of, you know, 50 or 75 or so. You know, on that subject again, in 2017, me and Duncan, this both kills us. We did the 203 at the World Championships. I was first going into the final and he was second. And we both messed it up. I went out too hard, like as in hard, not easy speed, hard. And he went out too slow. And, you know, I should have gone 144. I backed off in the semi-final. But you learn these things about, it was a real pinpoint of what's easy speed and what's going out too hard. And I feel like now I've kind of found that a bit of, you know, I've never gone out 50.5 since 2017. And I went 145.5 at the world final. And that was just, you know, too hard where last week it felt quite comfortable. So it just shows the kind of place that I'm in now. But yeah, even the 200 fly, going out in 24 high, 53 low, 122, that always felt quite comfortable. You know, the last 50 would really start to hurt. And for me, I think I didn't do enough endurance work on that fly, just to kind of have that back end. I'd love to give a 200 fly go now, but it's kind of managing, like, it does take a lot out of you because at the end of the day, you have to do a heat, you have to hit the heat hard, do the semi, go all in the semi, and then do the final, and then try and do 100 after that the next day. You know, it does take a little bit out of you. And is it really worth kind of risking that for the 100? So...
Well, let's stick with fly for now then, because we've got to talk about the 100. What happened? Because I think most of the pool were off their best. I'm not quite sure what happened.
Oh, I think for the 100, apart from Joe and Josh, who hit PBs, I think everyone else, it was a bit of a disaster, to be honest with you. Obviously, in the morning, Jacob, you know, had a good swim. You know, I went 52.2 in the morning, and I felt like I was doing a 200 fly, like literally just floating. Like, didn't really, you know, came back 27.8, 27.7. I was like, I've got a good second off that tonight, if not a bit more. And I just was like, I need to take it out a bit hard. I will go out a bit harder. But risk, I was like 24.3 in the morning. And I tried to go out a bit harder at night, but it literally, like, that kind of 0.3 harder, like, just rattle it from the off, where in the morning, going that 0.3 a bit easier, it just killed me. I had no back end. I had no turn. And for me, having that kind of 400 engine, if I even remotely try too hard the first half, not having that easy speed, it will kill the back half of the race. And I think that was the problem. And I knew as soon as I probably got to the 60-meter mark, I was like, this is done. You know, I knew that I wasn't moving past people. I couldn't kind of, I couldn't hold the water. My arm started to tire. But even though the stroke didn't like completely fall apart, I had no power. I had no, you know, catch position where I could kind of really push the water behind me. It just shows you that's, you know, most of them, like, look at the Phelps way of doing it. It would literally float the first 50 and hammer the back 50. You know, Milak would be the same. You know, there's probably Dressel that can go out really, really quick, but then come back in a 26 high. But, you know, no one's going to go out in 23-1. It's just not going to happen. So for me, it's kind of really kind of coming back as fast as you can, the back 50, because I know I have the engine for that. But if you try, if you go overcook that first half too much, it's game over. And I think that's what I did completely, to be honest with you, because, you know, 51-7 to win the 100 fly champs was like, you know, I've done that at Mare Nostrum. No disrespect to Joe, but I, you know, it was a great swim for him, and he's a good lad. But you know, I feel like I can definitely go a lot faster than that when I get it right.
It was a really weird atmosphere on poolside, like before and after. I think everyone was a bit confused what happened.
I just think you know, Joe's had a great race. He got it right, you know, and, you know, fair play to the lad. He beat us all. But, you know, I think I feel sorry for Jacob, obviously, because of that swim. He's not going to the Olympics now, which is, you know, it's devastating. You work your backside off for years and years, and then you don't get the place where you want to go. You swim it wrong for 51 seconds, and, you know, it's really costing. But I think all these things happen for a reason. You know, it's definitely made me realise, right, this is how you need to swim it. Like, you can't do that again, especially if I want to be part of the, you know, the relays in summer. I can't do it like that. Otherwise, I'll let the whole team down. I'll let the bloody country down. So, you know, I don't want that to happen. But, you know, you live and you learn. And for me, you know, even to this day, you still learn about yourself, about what really works for you and what doesn't. And I feel like for me, there's a certain way I have to do it, and the way I did it at trials is not the way at all.
You kind of teed up nicely there. Is there any indication that the fly is part of your Olympic schedule, or is that too early doors? Do you have to prove yourself again, almost?
I don't think I have to prove myself again. I think I'll do, obviously, a few more 100 flies at the next few meets, but because I got the A time from last year at the Worlds, you know, I can still do it at the Olympics, but there's no point me doing it individually if I'm going to get 51-6, because it's not going to get anywhere. But I still feel like, you know I'm very good in relays. I'm very, very confident. I'm very reliable. I'm very confident. I know I can roll 50 point mid to low. It's, you know, I find that that's where I come into my own sometimes, because, you know, a lot of the guys kind of feel that pressure of being part of the team, but I really thrive in that. I feel like you're doing it for the boys or the mixed medley. I'm a real racer when it comes to that stuff. So knowing that part, I am very, very reliable. But I kind of have to prove myself to show that I can do 100 fly properly. And I think I will the next kind of month or so.
What was the reason for, this is going back a number of years now, but you took the 400 free out of your racing schedule and then brought the 100 fly in. What was the reason for that?
So basically, when I was younger, I was a bit of a flyer. I did it at 16, didn't do it at 17 because the freestyle just took off. So I was a flyer from like 11, won nationals at 11 years old. So I've always been quite a good age grouper. So when I was 11, 12 and 13, you know, I was medalling at nationals, 200 fly, 14, just off the medals, 15, won it again, won the 100. But I was doing like 4 a.m., 2 a.m., like doing everything, which I always think what you should do as an age grouper. And then 16, my freestyle just went boom. And it was like, I think I set the British record today for the 400 free. The 100 fly, I went 54 point, did the 4 a.m. So it was just doing everything. And then the year after that, it was the British champs and I qualified for my first world. So I was 17 and I went, what did I do? I went 347 and 147 and I just stopped doing the fly. And then 2014 Commonwealth Trials, I did the 100 fly for a bit of a laugh. Like, I just didn't really care. Ended up winning it, and I was like, oh, okay. I wasn't expecting it at all because I didn't do any butterfly work. 2015, didn't do it, like, just wasn't part of my schedule. And then it was the last day of the world in Kazan, and, you know, was still doing the 400 free, got second at the world, you know, good swim. And the last day, Bill said to me, the head coach, he's like, you're doing the fly on the medley relay. And I was like, I haven't done any flying for a long time. And but I knew I could do it. I knew how to race it, like just kind of control and just lever the back 50. So that's where it kind of came into its aura, really. So 2016, we're still doing both of them. Did the 100 fly, won it at the trials, did it at the Olympics. dropped 51.6 for the first time, 51.8 maybe, I don't know what it was. 2017, was still doing both. And that's when it kind of went 51 mid to low, 51.1, 50.6. And I was like, wow, you know, it's just dropped a lot. And the 4 and the 3 was not quite where it was going. It was like 344, just stuck on that 344, 343, 345 even. Excuse me. And I had to kind of make a call. I was like, well, the 100 fly is a lot easier to train for than a 4 and a 3. Yeah. So at the Commonwealth Games the year after, I went 345, and that was my last 400 I did. And the 100 fly, I got second. Chad Leclerc beat me, but he was firing that, mate. He was doing really well. And then, you know, that's where I kind of just started doing more of the 100 fly, really, especially in Tokyo. Obviously, didn't do the individual, but my splits were amazing. I feel like I could have got the bronze individually. I think that's kind of what people have said, and I feel like I could have done that. But ever since then, it's, you know, I think I will do a 4 and a 3 again. I think I might do it at Seta Colli, because I know that endurance-wise, aerobically, I'm probably the best I've ever been. And I think that's something I just want to see what I can go. You know, why not? Same as the 100 free. But I still think I could go a decent time on the 400 if I was rested. I really do.
Decent in terms of, like, you see what the Aussies have done this last week over there, which is just nuts.
It's classic.
341s.
When I saw that, I was like, fair play to the lads. But then I saw the 200 and I was like, not quite as good.
No, I get
that. But no, them 341s are brilliant swims. But I look at it and think, I break it down, and for me, going out in 149, you know, it's not. I don't think it's that hard. It's more the endurance side of things, of holding your stroke, keeping power onto the water, being efficient, and holding that kind of like comfortable rate of going the same time and of coming back in 152. And that is, you know, that's the 341 there. You know, it sounds very, very easy, but you know, it's definitely a lot harder than that. But no, they were quality swims, and they're good boys as well. They're good lads.
Absolutely. Now, obviously, all of this performance over the past 6 months or so has come off the back of your move to Millfield.
Yes.
Which some might say is a little bit of a risk in Olympic year, leaving the known quantity of Bath and the success that Dave McNulty's had over his coaching career.
Yeah.
So why the move? Or actually, even was it a risk for you?
I don't think it was a risk at all. But I knew I wasn't going to swim any worse. You know, I wasn't swimming bad, but it wasn't swimming the way I should have been swimming. I even, after the meet, I spoke to Dean and I was like, something's not working. He's like, yeah, something needs to change. Because I was just getting like, you know, I felt like I was dying on the 100 fly. My freestyle was nowhere near where it should be. And it was just like the gap between the fastest lads in Britain and me was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm like, I literally do in the pool everything I can to be the best in the world. Like, I always give 100%. You know, I know I'm a great trainer. You know, I work my backside off. I always have done, I always will do. But something for me wasn't clicking, as in, like, I wasn't getting the results that I wanted to get. And I remember in Reims beforehand, we went to test out what it was like, our holding camp for this year. And I literally couldn't swim. We were doing 10 300s. And I was at the back of the lane, I almost being lapped by Dino. I couldn't swim. And I was like, something's not right here. It's just not. And it just knocked my confidence completely. And like from then on, you know, obviously seeing doing, you know, Matt swimming really well at Milford, my home program, I was like, well, you know, I started having doubts about what I was doing. And when you start having doubts about what you're doing, you start questioning yourself and thinking, and you're not seeing the results you want to receive, but you did everything right. You start putting things into your head and thinking, well, clearly it's not working anymore. You know, I was 27 and there's no way in hell I'm not where I should be. So, you know, I made the call after the Worlds. You know, I parked my performances and I was like, okay, something needs to change here. And, you know, I spoke to, you know, the guys at Millfield. You know, Ewan's my old, you know, youth coach. He looked like a big brother to me, love him to bits. And I had a chat with Ryan and, you know, from then on, we kind of said, okay, well, this is it. You know, I want to make a move. And for me, and as anyone will tell you, Olympic year is leaving no stone unturned, making sure you've done everything you can do to get it right for Olympic year. And I didn't want to have that, you know, look back of like 10, 15 years time of like, you know, what if I didn't move? You know, what if I did move? What if I didn't move? And, you know, having that thing of like not trying. So, you know, I was at Bath with under Dave for 3 or 4 years, and, you know, he's a brilliant guy. He's a great coach, but I wanted that change of environment, change of scenery. You know, I was just much happier being, you know, when I moved, you know, I still live in Bath, I still commute every day, but it wasn't really a risk, I'd say, because I knew that it would work. And obviously Ewan's there, my old youth coach, and he's there on poolside coaching me, you know, Ryan's delivering the sessions. You know, I knew that I was going to swim well. I knew after, you know, a couple of weeks, really.
So what's changed in the training? Has it been more sort of physical changes, or is it more mental?
I'd say a bit of both. I'm definitely a lot happier where I'm training now. But I think I'm just a lot fitter aerobically, you know. And for me, I grew up training for the 400. And for me, that's what I was always doing years and years ago, having a big engine, very good aerobically. And I think for me, that's made the difference, is just doing that. I don't want to dive into too much detail on it, but I think just generally across the board is that I'm much fitter than I was. I'm recovering quicker. And I think now I'm a lot more aerobically better. You know, I'm holding much more water. You know, I can kind of maintain my stroke when I'm swimming. When I'm getting tired, I don't start swinging and start fighting it. But yeah, I just say, I think, like, yeah, I'm much fitter than I was. And I think that's made the difference, really.
I've heard the technical feedback that Ryan gives as well is just nuts. I think, yeah, I think the last 5 meters of Matt's 100 free, he had like 5 free freeze frames and was scribbling all over it, apparently.
Yeah. I think with that, you know, Ryan, the way he looks at things, he's very into detail. And for me, having an answer why we're doing stuff, this is what we're doing it for, and why we're working on this, why I have to do that, and why Matt does this, is like we're completely different people. You know, Matt is, you know, he's an amazing swimmer. He's so fast, but we literally couldn't do more polar opposite stuff in the pool. You know, and that's for me is what, this is what I need to do to get better. You're doing this and you're doing that, and that's it. You know, it's, you know, we grew up doing different things, and I think that's what, you know, makes me who I am. That's what makes him who he is. So yeah, it's definitely different, but yeah, it's something's good.
Do you get a kind of full circle kind of feeling having started at Millfield and now being back at Millfield again?
Yeah, it's quite strange because I said this before. I was like, I learned to swim in Manchester, and then obviously went to Millfield, went to Bath, gone back to Millfield, and then obviously it's quite strange, really. So yeah, being back there is definitely different. It's nice to see that my names and the school records are still there. I think they'll be there. Quite nice. Yeah, they're still there, which is cool, but. Yeah, it's nice to see old teachers around now and again. But for me, I still go to a friend's house on the day, one of my best friends. So rather than coming back to Bath, I don't have to, you know, drive half an hour there, drive 45 minutes back because the traffic's bad. I can literally stay at his on the day, have a nap, have some food, go training again in the afternoon, then just drive home. So you know, it's quite nice to have that there, which is, you know, definitely a lot easier for me and the commute, really.
And you don't have to give up living in Bath as well. Lovely city.
No, exactly. Yeah. And I don't think my Courtney would do that either. She was like, street. I was like, no, we're not moving to the street. So it was quite nice for her as well. Because we're literally 5 minutes from town. So we can, you know, even if I come back, I only do 2 doubles a week. So on a Wednesday and the weekends, if she's, you know, works from home, you know, at lunchtime, we go to town, it's 5 minutes away. So we can get coffee, get lunch. And, you know, Bath's beautiful. You know, a great place to live. But, and we've grown to love it. When we first came down, I was like, I don't like it. It's not enough going on. But, you know, very nice place to live. It is.
It's a bit different from Manchester, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot different from Manchester. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Now, you've already spoken on this podcast that you love to swim the relays and swimming for the for the team and the country. Now, we've said that you're one of the best relay swimmers, certainly this country, maybe even of the world. Is that something that you take pride in?
I think so. I mean, I don't really see it as, I never see it as like in terms of medal tallies and across the world, I think I've made the most finals in relays in the world in history. Or I think I'm like one behind Phelps. There was a stat on SwimSwam somewhere and I found it. And it was literally like Phelps, me, Lochte, which I thought was really cool. You know, because I've been around for so long and been part of it. But yeah, I just feel like, you know, the relays are fun. It's definitely more fun than the individuals. It's like you're being around with the lads. You win on the podium with your best mates. Like I remember when we won the mixed medley, you know, having Adam next to me, you know, one of my best men for my wedding. I'm like, you're Olympic champions with one of your best mates. This is, you know, that rarely happens. So, But yeah, I've always kind of, I feel very relaxed in the relays. I've always kind of known that I'm very reliable. I never bottled a relay before. You know, sure. I feel like people, they know that I'm good in them, and I can literally become, well, I've proven before when I haven't had great individuals, I've just become a different animal in the pool, you know, hunt people down, take it out. And yeah, it's kind of worked well for British swimming, I think.
Just a little bit.
Is it a hard call for you? So if, like you in Tokyo, you had your opportunity to win gold in the mixed medley, but then pull out of the 100 fly. Is that ever a difficult decision for you?
Well, I didn't have the choice, unfortunately. That was the problem.
Oh, right.
Okay. No, that's all right. No, so the problem was it that, you know, having that being pulled out of my event, that really took a toll on me. You know, you asked Tom Dean, you know, my head was completely gone for a long time, and it really took me a long time to get over it because I knew I could have got a medal in that 100 fly. But the problem was is that we thought that we could take down America on the last day of the medley relay. So they were saying, because obviously, you know, they didn't want to put Jacob in because his individual wasn't great. So British swimming don't take any risks. That's what they're one thing they're good at. They won't take any risk. Why would you risk not being in the final or not getting a medal? So they said to me, if I had done the individual 100 fly, it would have been on the, it would have been the mixed medley heat, the final, the 100 fly individual, the 100 fly semi-final, and then the medley heat, medley final. So it was 700. So, it, you know, it's, can I be on my absolute best for that last day to try and take America down for the medley relay? And that was their question. You know, and unfortunately, we still didn't. Even if I'd gone 49.9, we still wouldn't have won it. So, you know, that kind of, it haunted me for quite a while. But I've, you know, I've got over it now. But at the time, you don't think about it because I knew my fly was really firing. Yeah. But yeah, unfortunately, I didn't really have a choice, which is a bit of a shame.
I mean, it can also be sacrificial in the fact that, like, people like us say you're the best relay swim ever, and then some people forget like the individual success that you've seen as well, which is kind of not fair on you as the swimmer. So it is a really selfless kind of role to take within British swimming, even if like you just said you didn't have a choice.
Yeah. It's quite a weird direction. One. Yeah, no, it's interesting. It is really interesting. But for me, you know, I was, you know, for individual stuff, it's like, you know, obviously winning that 200 freestyle in 2015, first male to do it, you know, that was a long time ago, but end of the day, no one else can take that away from you. You know, you've been a world champion, you'll always be a world champion. I think people don't realise, like, World and Olympics, you know, to win it individually is hard. It's really, really hard. And then to do it again is even harder. So it just shows you how good, obviously, how good Adam is. To, you know, repeatedly do that back to back. And people forget that. But for me, I'm, you know, I'm happy with what I'm doing, and I know that if I get my individuals, you know, times right, for example, this, even the 203 at the trials, that 145.2 is getting top two in any of the nation across the world. You know, it is, and that's just the way. But unfortunately, I think setting the trend off years ago of moving the 203 still on, they're faster now, which is quite nice to see. But it just shows that I know that I'm in the mix, you know, generally to put up a good swim. And I think, like, now moving forward, I think that race is just going to get tighter and tighter and tighter across, you know, us four or five lads in Britain. Mm-hmm. But even the individual success, you know, I've, you know, medal in the 400 freestyle at the World Championships, to win the 200 free, to medal in three different events, you know, for me, it's something that I always never thought I'd do when I was young. And then obviously relay success of we've won everything. So yeah, I think so far I've had a pretty good career.
I mean, you've just listed a load of ups in your career, but you've had a few downs in your career as well. And I know you like motivating and inspiring the next generation of swimmers coming through. But what would your best advice be to these younger swimmers who have aspirations of reaching, let's say, any level in the sport of swimming?
My advice to you guys would be just to enjoy what you do. Don't take things too seriously. Like, I think one thing we forget is that, let's say you have a bad swim. You know, you might get upset, you might cry, whatever it is. At the end of the day, the only person that really cares is yourself, probably mum and dad, you know, guardians, parents, whatever, whom it may be. But the world will keep going round. It's not going to stop. The world's not going to stop. You know, there's a lot more to life than not getting a personal best time. And for me, I don't see myself as, you know, right now I'm obviously, I'm swimming, but there's a lot more to it than that. I'm getting married. I've got things lined up after swimming. And this is a part of my life that you know, I'm, you know, very thankful for. But you guys coming up now is about just enjoying it. You know, work hard because, you know, that's the way you're going to get the results. But also enjoy it as well, because once it's gone and that shelf life's gone, you want to finish, you know, you can't do it again. So make sure you have no regrets, you know, in your career, because, you know, that's the last thing you want is to think, you know, I wish I trained harder. Make sure you do everything you can to be the best you can be, and, you know, have no regrets and enjoy it, because once it's gone, it's gone.
Jimmy, that's a very nice place to end the majority of this podcast. We finish always with some quick fire questions.
Go for it.
So our guests can get to know you a little bit better away from the swimming pool as well in summer.
All right.
What's your favourite event in swimming?
Favourite event in swimming, probably the 2 and 3.
Who is your swimming idol?
Well, here we go. This is going to get tasty, because in 2012, it was Sun Yang. It was. Then obviously it came out as a drug cheat, and then I beat him a few years after. That was quite nice. Well, I got his cap from 2013, and this is before it all came out as what he did. And I have it down. I have it in the garage somewhere. I should have put it in the bin a long time ago. But in terms of swimming heroes, I always liked Ian Thorpe. I think when I was really, really young, the Thorpedo, doing the big body suit, you know, he was special. And the times he did back then, 20 years ago, you know, he'd win now. So it's, probably Ian Thorpe back in the day. Yeah.
Nice. What's your proudest moment in swimming?
Proudest moment in swimming, probably winning the tuna freestyle when I was 19 and beating, you know, the field that was in that final was, you know, it was massive, obviously, to beat Sun Yang. You know, Ryan Lochte to race Lochte was amazing. People you've, you know, watched for years. Paul Beeman, world record holder. Chad Leclos in there. It's just something that you never dream of. And then to race them and beat them is just like, wow. I'd say that, yeah.
What's the hardest set you've ever done in training? And I'm sure there's
hardest set I've ever done in training? At school years ago, Joel used to give us at Millfield a session every year called Big Friday, and it'd be like 1500s, and it'd be like just swimming aerobically, and the last like one or two would turn into 3100s, you know, best average kind of stuff. So, you know, that was a long time ago, but yeah, that was quite tasty. But yeah, there was another one we did as well, and it was like the year of 2012, and from September to 2 weeks before taper for trials, the London trials, it was a Monday evening, and it was 6200s best average. The following Monday, it was 7, then it was 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and then back down a 6. So that was like every Monday, so that wasn't very nice. Oh, yeah, but it was good, but it worked. But yeah, that was really hard mentally.
They're from a while ago. They've got to be pretty ingrained in you at this point to remember those.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, I mean, they're ones I'll just never forget. Yeah.
PTSD kind of level.
PTSD. Yeah.
And final question, get to know you away from a swimming pool. If you're on a road trip, there's 3 spaces in the car. You can take friends, family, celebrities, anyone you want. Who would you take with you?
I'd take my missus, Courtney. I would take... take my brother, and I'd take my dog. That'd be it.
Nice. Good stuff.
It's a dog. It's always good to have a dog in there.
Yeah.
I've got He's one got to come. He's got to come wherever we go. Yeah.
There's plenty of dogs in swimming people's cars. Absolutely. Mm. Well, Jimmy, thank you so much for giving up some of your time this evening. It's been a pleasure talking to you. It's always great watching you race, and congratulations on amazing British champs, and best of luck this summer at Paris.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, can't see to... I think that 4x2 relay has a great chance of hitting a world record. I don't want to jinx it, but we've got a good chance.
We don't mention that, unfortunately.
No, we didn't bring it up.
No.
Yeah, we don't
we'll
bring
cut
it up.
That quickly.
We said that to... I think Duncan said it a while ago. We said we wanted to do this. He was like, no, we didn't. This was ages. we don't really bring it up. You know, we're just trying to do the best things we can, and the result will come. That's what we've always said. So hopefully it'll come.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, James, and we'll see you soon.
Cool.
Dan, we usually get 30, 40, 45 minutes, maybe even an hour with some amazing swimmers around this country. We never take it for granted. And I really hope people don't take for granted the episode that we've just had with Jimmy. Being able to talk openly, honestly about his performances at trials, what went right, what went wrong. There's so many lessons there that young swimmers can take away from the sport of swimming, thanks to one of British swimming's best ever.
Do you know what one big takeaway for me? Because he's been swimming for, you know, best part of a decade, 12 years or so. And he can list off every year and how fast he swam all of his events. It's incredible. The detail he goes into, he remembers everything. I think that's probably a lesson to be learned here. It's like, go into detail. And he clearly loves the sport.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the reason why he's been doing it for so long.
Well, you heard how he ended the podcast, basically giving advice for everyone that enjoyment is key. And like, even before that 200 free final, which was tense, he wasn't on the team yet. There were other swimmers there who weren't on the team yet. Everyone's gunning for that 4x2 relay. And he was just like, well, we were chatting. We were having fun. Yeah. We were joking around. Like, there's an enjoyment aspect that sometimes, and very often actually, gets lost when it comes to the elite end of the sport.
Yes, it's also trusting the process as well. He's obviously made the move to Millfield. It wasn't a risk from what he was saying. And based on it, he's clearly works, obviously. His move with training with Ryan, and obviously he's talking about Ewan as well. That's clearly works. And yes, it is all about enjoyment, but trusting your support network of coaches and parents. And he said he doesn't actually train with Matt. They're under the same umbrella of Millfield.
That doesn't surprise me.
Well, they're two different swimmers, aren't they?
I was going to say, for some reason, Matt is the thoroughbred sprinter of the two. We've seen what he does in the 50, the 100.
Yep.
Those are incredibly strong events. In fact, he might not be the only swimmer anymore. I think Milak's done it, but he's the only swimmer to go sub 22, sub 48, sub 145.
Yep.
Like that's Matt's training. Whereas Jimmy's background is the 400. Like he has always been an incredible 400 freestyler, and that is almost a shame that that's no longer in his schedule. But obviously the world is nuts at that event. I still think he could do a job, like given a final, because when it comes to the Olympics, actually the 4-3 isn't about the time. It's always about the race.
It's just the race.
Who do you want in the race? Well, Jimmy Guy.
You pick that guy, don't you? Obviously.
But no, that didn't surprise me whatsoever to hear that they're on completely different paths.
No, but I think to your average, let's say, age grouper, because they swim at the same place, you just assume that they're doing the sessions.
True.
Back to back, you know, and they're doing it at the same time. But of course, at that level, it is very individualized, obviously.
Mm.
But very happy that he came on and gave his thoughts on everything, especially the 100th fly. So it doesn't always go his way.
No.
And he was very open and honest on that 100th fly, that it just didn't work out for him on that time because he took it out too hard, or he was a little bit too tense on the first 15 and had nothing on the way back. I really appreciate his honesty on that one.
So that just about rounds up our chat from this week's podcast. I want to finish this week by saying a massive thank you to everyone who acted upon our call for action last week, which is just incredible. So if you haven't listened to last week's episode, we said we are striving ahead of the Olympics to get to 1,000 subscribers on the YouTube channel of the Propulsion Swimming podcast so that we can monetize it a little bit. We've been doing this for 4+ years now.
Yeah, can you believe
our wives are incredibly patient with us.
Yeah, bless them.
And for everyone who went over there and subscribed, we owe you guys a massive thank you. The number has gone up significantly. We're not at the 1,000 mark yet. So if you do enjoy this podcast, if you're fans of Propulsion Swimming, head over there, subscribe. I know a few people contacted us and didn't realize we actually have two channels. YouTube channels. We separated out the podcast a little while ago so that it has its own place to grow, and it's very different from the other content we put out on our main channel. But yes, thank you for everyone who has subscribed. Me and Dan, we're going to be back in 1 week's time, as we always are, on a Thursday. We've got another fantastic guest lined up for you guys, another swimmer who is going to the Olympics. So they're big conversations over the next few weeks, and we can't wait for you all to listen to them, essentially. We love doing this.
Yeah, we're not very good at self-promoting, I think.
No,
this is where the whole difference in two YouTube channels has come about. But thank you again, like Scott said, to everyone who has subscribed. I'm very much looking forward to another Olympic guest next week.
Good. Very good story with the next one as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So that just about rounds up this week's podcast. If you haven't subscribed already, please do so on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And me and Dan will be back, like we said, in 1 week's time.
Yeah, thank you for listening, everyone. And we'll catch you on the next one.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.